You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. Two hat tricks in four games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modgepodge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modgepodge.
Yeah, there's a modgepodge. Whole modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York. You are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. I'm in the blue room with David Goss. Out in the octagon is Matt the Armchair Analyst Doyle.
The last time in a while.
Oh, boy. Got the phone call. The baby is a-coming. Cameron Russell Wiebe on his way very, very soon. As you all know by now, he is the namesake of CCL legend Cameron Porter, who also happens to do some work for our office here on the development side.
He also colloquially known as Cameron Vitalis Digitaco.
Oh, no.
I just tripped over myself.
I know. It flowed so well,
for
you.
Well, because when you got the phone call, then I'm getting nervous. So now I feel like I'm having a baby. We're all having a baby,
oh,
and like there's a lot going on.
Yeah, you know what? I think we're all having a baby is correct. It's the whole crew here.
It's the ETR baby.
We all get to share in this joy.
Is the baby sponsored by Continental?
Or
driven by Continental?
Better believe the baby's driven by Continental.
Wow. You're just going to have it on.
That's right. I'm going to be having
the stroller's just going to have
correct.
Four.
Yeah, dude. Got to hit that big wheel. Get it rolling. Any cab
so
that takes
me
home has
maybe,
to have Continentals.
Does Gasman get the official uncle title?
Come on, Dave.
Dave. Uncle Dave for sure.
Come on.
I think, you know. Mm-hmm. Uncle Doyle, maybe. That actually, Uncle Doyle sounds creepy.
Yeah,
and I don't want to make you feel older than you already are. So,
because you're like a thousand years
right.
old.
It was like
who else? Uncle Simon.
Yeah, Uncle Simon. Yeah, I think Uncle Simon gets it.
Simon's a necessity to teach your children the realities of the world.
Right, and perhaps also, you know, really bring them up in the. Not so reality based aspects.
Simon is like the old, like, what's it called? The old fairy tales that they'd use to scare children.
Right, correct.
Simon is that fairy tale.
Uh-huh.
He's Grampus.
He's got, he's got kind of like the warts on his face and like the walking stick that's just like crooked.
Yeah.
And
he's like, if you don't believe in flowing soccer, you're. Fingers will get eaten off. And they're like, okay.
Yeah, it's like, well, if you don't fall down when you're fouled in the box,
right.
Both your knees are going to lock up, so be ready for that. Ben, what do we think about Ben? Research Bear Ben, King of Takes?
I just don't know.
I would say no, because I don't think you want young Cam to come in that soft with his takes, because the thing about Ben is that he has not been the same since the Sounders thing. So I understand why we still call him the King of Takes, but I honestly, he's soft, and I want Cam to be a little bit more ready for the world than Uncle Ben would be able to bring out of him.
I mean, I think that's fair. We'll have Ben, of course, argue his side, and maybe that will be the next hot take that he actually brings with real heat.
Also, I'm pretty excited about the quilt that I'm going to have made of Cameron Porter scoring the goal against Pachuca, which is just going to be laid over Cam so that he can always live
Callum,
in that.
You're going to have Callum Malice in the background, like, admiring his diagonal ball,
correct? Yeah, because that ball's
unreal. Yeah, of course. Okay, we have a lot to talk about here today. It's a very happy day, but, you know, a lot of different reasons here. Let's talk about soccer. U.S. National Team interim head coach Dave Sarakin will join us in segment number dos. He is in Portugal right now, where the U.S. national team, a young team with a couple veterans, is training ahead of a friendly against Portugal on Tuesday. You can watch that one on FS1 at 2:45 p.m. Eastern, some afternoon national team soccer for you. That ought to be really fun. We're going to talk Brad Friedel. He is the new head coach of the New England Revolution. Remy Gard, we'll talk him as well. He's the new head coach, as well as director of player personnel for the Montreal Impact. Rapids are looking for a head coach. We've got a rookie of the year. We've got a defender of the year. Toronto FC are appealing Josie's red card. Clint Dempsey might return to Seattle. A lot to talk about here. And, of course, the Hot Take Hotline is coming up a little bit later.
401-206-0MLS.
There's always quality. And any fatherly advice and or, you know,
Yeah, except you're not going to be here, so I'm going to have to take it all down and send it forward.
Relay it my way, man. Relay it. Before we get to the news, as far as coaches go, Robbie Rogers, Chris Rolfe, Justin Mapp all announced their retirement since the last show. So congratulations to all three on wonderful careers. Congratulations to all three on whatever the next step in life is. I think we've all enjoyed watching all of them throughout their time in MLS and otherwise. I'm going to show a special shout out to Robbie Rogers for being a trailblazer, for having the courage that he has shown over the second half, latter portion of his career, for being the first openly gay athlete, male athlete in U.S. professional sports.
Team sports, correct.
Top five leagues. So, yeah.
And it's too bad with the injuries, because after he was able to get over that and be open, and then he felt like, and it looked like he was playing good soccer, and then he just kept getting injured. And it was unfortunate because he was going to be a big part of the LA Galaxy, and I think he's going to forever be a big part of the U.S. soccer community.
Yeah, he's a trailblazer. By the way, he's going to be fine. I like see him on TV and I think Target commercials.
Yeah,
or,
he's chilling.
Yeah, he's good to go. Robbie Rogers, he's got this thing figured out. Also, send suggestions for MLS story time for the holiday break. I think that's what we're going to go with for our special episodes. Like everybody else, you know, we go hang out with our families, celebrate the holidays, but we want to continue to give you that good MLS hashtag content. So looking for suggestions there. Let's get right into it, guys. Brad Friedel announced on this Thursday as the new head coach of the New England Revolution. He's the seventh coach in club history. He's been coaching the US U19 since January 16, so almost 2 years here. He's also an assistant under Tab Ramos with the U20s. He's got his UEFA Pro coaching license. He's had an academy in the U.S. for a long time to varying degrees of success. Tottenham's academy, he spent some time there when he's with that club. He's been, you know, all around Europe, England, I should say, but I guess Europe by extension, as a professional goalkeeper, MLS, U.S. national team, 80-plus caps. As a player, he's got an incredible resume, but Doyle, he does not have experience as a professional head coach. What does this mean for the Revs? Why did this hire happen? And is it a good one?
Yeah, I mean, it's far too early to answer that last question. And I understand exactly why there are so many Revs fans who are looking at this and saying, yeah, but we could have gotten a guy who has experience. We could have gotten not necessarily a Tata Martino or a Remy Gard who have experience, obviously, in top five leagues, but like at least someone who has more of a track record in terms of running a team than Brad Friedel does. That said, if you look at Brad Friedel's resume, I mean, he has that UEFA Pro license. He worked with, like, his last 2 years as a pro, he was basically a player coach for Tottenham. You know, he, whether it was, you know, working with the U23s or the academy kids, he was doing a lot of that stuff. He has, I think, a USSFA license as well. He's worked with the U19s. It feels, this is probably Mike Burns' last hire, right?
Right.
This is a, you know, if this one doesn't work out, it's probably Mike Burns who is on the chopping block. Mike Burns and Brad Friedel go back 30 years. Mike Burns is hiring a guy he knows and trusts, and I'm sure they have had a million discussions about the game, and they probably see eye to eye in a real way and have a level of comfort with that. So you understand why that was made. I mean, I'm bummed that Gio Savarese, one of my favorite players in MLS history, is not going to get this job, and hopefully he will get one of the other jobs that's going to come open soon, because I think he's a very good coach. But I get this. This is not a hire that lacks ambition for the Revs. It's not like a player just retired and they're like, okay, well, I guess you're the head coach now. Like, we've seen teams do that over the last decade. This isn't that. So it's at the same time, it's not an obvious home run, you know, golazo. Like, oh yeah, this is obviously the right guy for the job. But like, there are ways to defend this. How's that for a tepid take? As Ben Bear quality right there.
You know, I thought you vacillated back and forth. I thought it was a well measured take, and I'm feeling a lot of what you're saying here.
I think I agree.
There is a big uncertainty here, just because we don't have, you know, we don't have proof in the pudding, so to speak, where you say, hey, okay, I've seen 5 years of what you are as a professional head coach. We've really been able to dig into who you are, both as a man manager
or,
and tactically,
or a guy who had a super, let's say he had a super successful U.S. national team career, which he did, experience in the world of soccer, and had been an assistant coach in MLS for a good team for 5 years. I think that would be a little different, too.
Yeah.
That's the level of uncertainty.
It's the day-to-day on the professional side as a coach. Now, as Doyle said,
and in this league, he hasn't been a part of this league in 20 years. And this league has changed a lot, and you don't know where his mind was at when he first came in terms of, oh, how do teams run themselves? How does the league work? What are the mechanisms that you use to bring in players? Now, he's covered the league as a broadcaster since he's come back or since he's retired, which definitely gives him some help. He's in the rooms. He's talking to everyone. He's watching everything happen. So there's not a complete lack of familiarity, but he's been in England. So it was the same question marks that go to Tata Martino. How can he figure it out? Go to a coach like this who hasn't been really in that system for 20 years.
And I think one of the big questions with the Revs remains the same, which is from a personnel perspective, do they have the right mix? Do they have the right guys that fit together in a collective way to be successful? They have a lot of talent. We've talked about that repeatedly. There's no doubt that from a talent perspective, the Revs have good players, and they've spent a lot of money on the back end of that roster, on the back line, which is where they needed to spend it. Now, those signings are still being evaluated. We don't know if some of those TAM guys on the back line, the Dionas of the world, are going to cut it long term, are going to make this team a playoff team in what is a very, very tough Eastern Conference, and I expect probably will only get tougher. So he's got a tough job ahead of him. But I do think that he has a lot of the attributes that you would look for. The one he doesn't have, like we said, is experience. Now he will get that. And as Doyle said, you know, look, we can't say this for certain, but Mike Burns, probably a time for him to really get a guy who he trusts in every way possible, because he may not get a second shot at it. And that trust, that relationship, that really is the basis for guys getting jobs, women getting jobs, anybody getting jobs in soccer, professional sports, here at Major League Soccer in the front office, at your neighborhood corner store, you know, at the marketing firm around the corner, whatever it might be. People hire people they trust and want to work with, and now they've got to get it right. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, and there's one more point I want to make here, and I think it goes to the perception of American soccer coaches and soccer in the U.S. in general. The U19s under Brad Friedel have been really successful, and he's put a lot of players into that U20 team that just made the quarterfinals without guys like Pulisic and Haji Wright and Weston McKennie and Jonathan Gonzalez. He played a role in that. So he has, like, he's done some good stuff. And I think if we said we're hiring the head coach, or the Rev said we're hiring the head coach of the Paraguay U19s, who just had two really successful years, oh, and he played in Europe for 20 years and had one of the all-time great careers at his position, I think people would be like, wow, what an ambitious hire. But because it's coming from, it's literally an American coming from the American coaching system, people are a little bit like, no, this doesn't show the same type of, you know, ambition that we want. So I think that there's still, in the way it's being framed, there's still a little bit of sort of the self-loathing that has become endemic to the U.S. soccer fan. And that's something that, I don't know, I just feel like we need to be aware of it when we talk about this hire in particular.
Remy Gard, he is
he's
the new head coach of the Montreal Impact, the three-year deal. Joey Saputo hired the 51-year-old, so he'll also be director of player personnel, and you probably remember him as the manager of Lyon and Aston Villa, which was a short-lived job for sure, but he was very good with Lyon. He developed a lot of talent. Mauro Biello, of course, was a former head coach. We'll see if he ends up back in the organization. I like this hire. I think it's a good hire for Montreal because I think it's acknowledging that they need to or want to get more out of the academy structure, which I think they've been trying to figure out for a while. You saw FC Montreal go bye-bye, and for a lot of different reasons, mainly because I think these owners look at it and say, why am I spending $1.8, $2 million a year on a team that maybe produces one or two guys for the first team? There has to be a more efficient way of doing this. I think he wowed Joey Saputo, which is, of course, a prerequisite to get this job. And you like his track record in Ligue 1. You don't like it in the EPL, but that was so short-lived, and Aston Villa was so bad, to be frank, that I'm not sure I take a ton away from that. I think this is a job for him to come in and really try to build something as a three-year contract from academy to the first team and make sure the likes of, like, a Blue Tabla or a Anthony Jackson-Amel get the opportunities they need and develop in the right way so that this team can mix the Piattis of the world with the young talent that I think they've shown that their academy has, both with the Canadian national team and now with the first team. Dave's given it a, I don't know.
I love the idea of building a strong MLS academy for any team, so I'm not going to complain about that. They've definitely talked about it a lot over the last few years, and I sat with, I think it was Philippe Ulafoy. Let's see if we got that even close, who had ran their academy for a while under Biello, Marsh, like throughout the coaching changes. It's just how hard are you going to double down on that, and do you have the resource pool to pull from? It's not a huge city. It's not a huge area. So is there physically the players in your pool to pull from? Now, if you have a couple million people and you have good coaching, then it probably shouldn't matter. But it's my only question mark on that, because on the first team side, what type of MLS team is Remy Gard going to build right now? I mean, what does that squad look like?
He says attacking. He says possession-based. Doyle, what do you
think?
So
did I when I got hired as a coach. Man,
every time I've been hired, that's what I said too.
Just so you know, Montreal's population is 3.5 million.
Bam!
That's pretty big. Like, that's I think it's top 10 or so in MLS, maybe top 12. So it's not like it's small. The metropolitan area, according, well, I'm using Wikipedia here. Metropolitan area is 4.1 million. So that's not small, David. I think that there's a small market idea about Montreal that maybe doesn't quite hold true, and especially because they have the chance to be, and I think they're aiming for being the national team of Quebec. You know, the sort of how Barcelona are the national team of Catalonia. So I think that is part of this idea. And it's not, obviously it's not a mistake that they hired a Frenchman, a native French speaker as well. To do what you were doing, what you were talking about, Andrew, in order to become a team that develops, you know, Anthony Jackson Hamel didn't start getting real minutes until he was 24. To be a team that develops guys like that at 18 and sells them at 20 for a profit. And I think obviously that is going to be part of Remy Gard's job. The league needs to change the transfer rules. It can't be the league taking 25% cut of a homegrown transfer. And, you know, the reporting that Paul Tenorio has done for 442, and I think our own Sam Steichkull has done a little bit of it as well for MLSsoccer.com, suggests that change is coming in the offseason. And that's going to change, I mean, obviously it's going to change the way teams do business, but it's also, I think, going to change the way teams approach coaching hires. And what we might be seeing here league-wide is that the Remy Gard hiring is the canary in the coal mine for the way teams are going to start approaching the way they build their rosters, the way they use their academies, and the way they start interacting on a global stage. I think it's a good hire for Montreal in that regard because, hey, look, teams know if a player has played for Remy Gard and has that seal of approval, he's sold guys to every team under the sun. You know, every big league in Europe has a couple of guys who have played for Remy Gard. There's no reason MLS shouldn't be different in that regard. We should be a league that sells guys on the regular for good money to teams in the Premiership, to teams in La Liga, to teams in the Bundesliga, to teams in Serie A. And this hire says that Montreal are very serious about being exactly that.
And Lyon were one of the leaders in that style of building your club. Now, it wasn't,
and he was there from like
it, but
way
it wasn't
back
just
in the
him.
Day.
It was
a top-down
mentality from ownership. But he was extremely successful in developing young players who were sold for, like Doyle said, multi-million-dollar deals consistently and still winning at the first team level.
Yep. And by the way, he was the team, one of the teams that was promoted to Lyon, and they've become since a giant.
Yeah.
But there was a time when they were not a giant, and to see that kind of development up close and personal, whether you were the one that was doing it or not, those are the kind of relationships, the learning points that I think will be really valuable for a team like Montreal. I'm excited for this one. I think it will go very well for them. We will see. The Eastern Conference, as we've said, is an absolute beast. TikTok for the Rapids. Their head coaching search continues, I guess, but it kind of seems like they're just waiting for this New Zealand-Peru World Cup playoff to be done and done, dusted here. The 11th and the 15th are the two games for that. Anthony Hudson is the head coach of New Zealand. The rumor has been that he will be the head coach of the Rapids. We will see. I'm pretty sure they said that this was going to be done like a long time ago and just hasn't happened. Let's talk Rookie of the Year real quick. Julian Gressel won Rookie of the Year. Any surprises here? I mean, I think that's where my vote went. I thought he deserved it.
Yeah, I mean, that was the right choice. Abu Dunlady ended up having a really nice year. I think both Jake Nowinski and Nick Lima at the outside back positions were really good. Jack Elliott had a very good year, I thought, as center back. But to me, Gressel playing the role he did for a playoff team, 5 goals, 9 assists, third highest total assist total in MLS history for a rookie. It was pretty easy.
Eichel Parra, Defender of the Year.
That's an easy
one. Once again on my votes there. Look, this was a little bit of a tough field this year. I thought Eichel Parra was the choice, but I didn't think it was like runaway. Justin Morrow actually finished second in this vote. Kendall Waston after that. Leandro Gonzalez-Pirez, Matt Beasler, then Jovan Jones. I think Opara, Morrow, and Waston, and Jovan Jones, 9.5 from the club. So, yeah, I'm not sure where that one came from entirely. I wonder which club really loved him. Yeah, I don't have a problem here. I didn't think this year was a year of one singular dominant defender, if that makes sense. I thought Ike was the best,
I think Opara was utterly dominant until he got kicked in the face by Maxi Arruti, and that ruptured his eardrum. And he played through that for the last 2.5 months of the season, and he was still pretty good, but he wasn't what he had been the first 3.5-4 months of the season. He was so good those first four months that he could have not played and still been, I think, the defender of the year. Shout out as well to Alex Collins, who I think God was criminally overlooked here. And Chad Marshall, again, another huge year from him at age 34. Those guys, I think, were both underrated this season.
Huge congrats to Ike, though. We can talk, you know, I consider him like, I don't know that there was a singular dominant defender. I was there when he got kicked, and that was the scariest moment of the season, maybe the scariest moment I've ever been a part of on a soccer field or around a soccer field, because I wasn't on it. But, yeah, to have this season, to have this resurgence after all the injuries, just such a special story for both he and Sporting Kansas City. Alan Chapman was your ref of the year. Also, some news out of the MLS Conference Championships here. Toronto FC are appealing the Josie red card via independent review panel, so that means that one of a member of Pro, a member of U.S. Soccer, and a member of Canadian Soccer Federation are all looking at this to see if the punishment doesn't fit the crime or whether the crime happened at all. So Toronto FC submitted some footage from the security tapes there. They feel confident it'll get turned around. We will see. I don't expect this to be made very quickly because that committee has plenty of time to figure that thing out. Also going down, it looks like Clint Dempsey is probably going to return to Seattle in 2018. We've kind of been talking about that recently, but it's starting to hit the media a little bit. And Jesse Marsh says 2017 was the most successful season yet for the Red Bulls. What do we make of that from Jesse? He was talking about the integration of youth.
He changed the way they played, and he went as far as he's gone in the past. So I don't know that you can say it's not. They didn't win a supporter shield, which has value. It has meaning. It's a trophy. He said multiple times, and he was very earnest in it when I was with him in Toronto, that this was the most fun and the most he's enjoyed coaching a team. And he told the team that, and he told all of the media that. So there may be some relation to that as well.
All right, there you have it. That is the first segment here. We'll get to more with Dave Sarakin after the break. We'll see you in just a second.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
You are the sunshine of my life.
Back now at Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. We are talking U.S. national team. Dave Sarokin, the interim head coach of the U.S., is coming up in just 1 second. Portugal is the opponent on Tuesday. You can watch that one at 2:45 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Let's talk roster here. Doyle, I know you've been taking questions from the fans on Twitter, doing what you normally do. 21 guys here, 8 from MLS. The 21 is a little bit strange. It's less than we're accustomed to, but you can kind of understand it when you look at the MLS Cup playoffs going on, when you think, hey, Christian Pulisic is not going to be in this camp. Jonathan Gonzalez is with Monterrey still. Initial thoughts, strengths, weaknesses?
I like that there are 4 teenagers on it, even without Pulisic and even without Jonathan Gonzalez, who, from what I understand, would have been on it if Monterrey weren't playing. Monterrey's got a game tonight, and I think maybe one early next week as well. The game tonight is their game in hand to be top of Liga MX, so it's understandable. But this is – there are a lot of names on here that I wanted to see. You know, Matt Miazga, Cameron Carter-Vickers, who I've not been particularly high on in the past, has played very well for Sheffield, and – I mean, obviously, Tyler Adams, I think, has earned it. Josh Sargent is a surprise. But we're not going to see him again with the full national team for probably a year and a half.
Yeah.
And he's not going to be around in January for Camp Cupcake. So I understand why they got him in there for this one. It's low stakes overall. They're playing for a coach who's going to coach one game ever for the U.S. national team, maybe 2. So there's not a ton to take away, but it feels like a fresh start, and the whole program needs a fresh start. And I'm pretty okay with the group that they have in to help give us that.
So if you're looking at veteran presence here, because that was always going to be the case, you're never going to go all the way to one side of the coin and say all teenagers or all under 23 or whatever it might be, no matter what people say. Alejandro Bedoya is in this group. Tim Ream is in this group. I guess you could say a guy like Danny Williams is a veteran in a sense, so he hasn't been around for a while. So Chilliams is doing his thing. Bill Hamid is here. He just made the move overseas.
I think DeAndre Yedlin counts as a veteran at this point, right?
Agreed. I think you can put him that. Eric Lehigh is a veteran when it comes to professional experience. John Brooks, I would count him as a veteran as well, despite young age, just because he's been around. Dave, who's the guy that gets you excited? Here's the snub, maybe, that you're a little bit like, why wasn't he here? And I'll throw Justin Glad into that mix.
Yeah.
But I do know that you have young center backs, so to a certain extent, I can understand.
Except you're not building a roster. It doesn't matter.
And it's
about
like a long
game.
Camp.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I feel like, you know, get him in there, let him see what's up. But
I would agree. In terms of snubs, I don't know if that there's anyone that's high on that list. Jonathan Gonzalez is a player that you want to see, but obviously Doyle gave the reasons why. Haji Wright's a player that's playing in Germany who I've not been super high on when I've watched him with the youth national team, but he's getting some time and minutes, and he's over there. Kyle Scott's another player who's over in Europe that hasn't really played with the U.S. and could potentially be a player that you could have pulled into one of these. In terms of excitement, I think there's a ton of names. And obviously, I'm a huge fan of Tyler Adams. I really like the idea of having Kellen Rowe be involved. I really liked what he did at the Gold Cup last year, so I think he can play a central role.
Where would you play him? Because I look at this midfield here, Kellen Acosta, Adams, Bedoya, Gooch, McKinney, Rowe, Williams. Rowe's really the only one in that group that you could kind of sit there and say, okay, creative presence, really more about going forward than he is defending. The rest of those guys either box-to-box, I would say, or in the defensive role. How would you play him? Because we've seen him at outside back for the Revs.
We saw him at outside mid at Gold Cup, and I thought he cut in well and creates from that position. So I think you'd probably see them play with 2 box-to-box or holding midfielders and then a player like that on the wing who can cut in and create and have a little bit more freedom, and then DeAndre Yedlin can give you width from that right-back position. So I don't mind seeing him out there. And then Weston McKinney's the big one that everyone's so excited about, and everyone wants to see him get involved. And now it's his chance. It's his future. He's got 12 years.
Yeah.
So just enjoy it.
Yeah, he's into it, guys. He's into it. Portugal looks beautiful, but, of course, the game is what this is all about. Tuesday against Portugal, 2:45 p.m. Eastern. You can watch it on FS1. All the coverage, of course, MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app, and Extra Time Radio brings you the preview and the reaction. We'll talk about it a lot on Monday and then, of course, on Thursday of next week. Let's go to the interview right now. Dave Sarokin is on the line. Dave, how's it going, man?
I'm doing pretty well, guys. How you doing?
We are doing well, just waiting out this long MLS Cup playoffs break and paying attention to what goes down on that side of the pond, of course, because you have a young squad, a little mixture of guys, 21 players in camp, 8 from MLS, before we get to the here and now and then the future, we got to go revisit the past here. You know, Trinidad and Tobago missing the World Cup. It's these kind of traumatic night and then event that U.S. soccer fans are still dealing with. And, of course, the players and the coaches are still dealing with. Take me back to that night in Trinidad and Tobago, Dave. What did you feel before, during, after? How have you coped with this?
Well, guys, listen, it's – well, you asked me to take you back, so I'll take you back. You know, we had a really good week leading up to our game with Panama, and obviously a great result against Panama with a team that showed great energy and fight, and a team we trusted, and we've always trusted this group. And the recovery and the regeneration and the guys in terms of being ready to go against Trinidad all checked the boxes. And, you know, you learn a lot about sport, that there are no guarantees. And, you know, we've had a lot of feedback. I know there's a lot of people out there that were questioning a lot of things, but our preparation, our approach, our way of talking about both games, Panama and Trinidad, as a staff and even as a team, if we had to rewind it, there wasn't a whole lot we would change. The Trinidad game, when you score an own goal and a guy hits a shot that probably doesn't go in very many times if it's taken again, put a shock to the system. And of course, we put a lot into the second half to try to equalize. Christian gets the early goal, and we felt we had enough players on that field that could get it done. And on the day, it was the perfect storm where one post, a few saves, we don't get the job done in Trinidad. Obviously, Panama, Honduras get the job done, and we're out. And it was very gut-wrenching. It was very difficult for all of us. And like I said, you know, we felt going into that game that nothing was overlooked. And you learn a lot about life, that there's no guarantees, and in sport for sure. So I can tell you that, you know, like any kind of grieving process that we're all going through in the soccer community, on the inside, of course, it was maybe even worse. We all felt gutted, but you know, you have to move on. You have to move on. We certainly will learn a lot from the experience, and now we got to look ahead.
One of the things that's being talked about a lot coming out of that game is legacies. There are a lot of players on that field who may not see the U.S. national team again that are a large part of what's happened over the last 10, 15 years. When you look at those guys' career, how does this affect their legacy? What is their legacy now, being some great teams, but also the one team that didn't qualify over the course of about 30 years?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, the legacy, you know, I just don't feel you can define, when you use legacy, define one game to tarnish everything that's been put in, whether you're talking about coaches, whether you're talking about players. I feel that it's going to leave a bad taste for sure, but I think there are many players, veteran players, that did so much for this team leading up to that moment. And when you peel it back, I think, you know, history will tell you that these players contributed quite a lot to move this thing along. Of course, it ends poorly, so there's going to be a lot of debate about that. But those of us on the inside know what was given by many of the veterans and the performances over the years. And so in the whole total body of work, you know, I myself, and I hope others don't just use one downfall in terms of the Trinidad game to tarnish that legacy.
Dave, you've been part of this program for a while. Obviously, coming back now to coach this team, not qualifying for the World Cup is always going to be an upset, but in terms of where the players are, in terms of where the program's at, is it where you thought it would be in 2001, in 2002, where you hoped it would be?
Well, I think, you know, like I said earlier, I think from those years back in 2001 and 2 and all the cycles going through, you're going to have ups and downs. But I believe the program has expanded itself. I think the player pool has expanded itself. I think there's always going to be certain cycles where a group of players come together maybe a little bit better than in other cycles. But as far as the amount of experiences that these players now have, and certainly whether it's domestically in MLS with the league or going over to Europe, I think it's moved along very well. Now, of course, there's going to be room for improvement. There's going to be obviously a lot of debate about which direction that improvement should go. But I think all in all, you know, we've moved this thing forward. And this period of time is a difficult period. And I think whenever you go through something like this, now's the time to sit back, reflect, and continue to, you know, find ways to continue to make it better. But I still feel that we've pushed this thing along in a good way, and we're going to learn a lot from this.
Dave, the past dictates the future a lot, and let's look at the future and the present now. 21 players called into this camp, 8 MLSers. You've got to find a way to turn the page. When you got this job and were assigned the interim tag here and you said, okay, I've got to build a roster, I've got to build a team to go play Portugal. It's in the middle of the playoffs. We've got a lot of guys in different positions. We've got this disappointment, this huge gut punch from Trinidad and Tobago in the World Cup. When you sat down to make this roster, take me through your thought process.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it's a combination of many things. First of all, as you said, we had to sort of take a look and see who was available that made sense given the long year a lot of players had as part A. Part B was players that perhaps would likely not be a part of the next cycle. And those that were currently in good form clearly were in Portugal, so trying to bring some of the younger Europeans together. And then looking at the playoffs, we were very firm in not taking anyone that was still participating in MLS playoffs, because there are a number of young players that still are that I would have liked to have brought in. So it was a combination of all that. And you know, the emphasis for me, and I think for the Federation and for our staff and all, was to bring a group of guys that would be given an opportunity. Yeah, an opportunity for themselves, an opportunity for us to get to know better, guys that we think perhaps do have a future in in the national team. And then some MLS guys with some veteran, you know, experience, like a Bedoya, who positionally for this team would help us on Tuesday against Portugal. You know, Timmy Ream is a European-based guy, a little bit older, but still a guy that we felt could settle things in the back. So we wanted to combine that with some guys with experience that would help us compete on Tuesday. So that's the short-term objective. And then, obviously, build it out with a number of the younger guys that we want to get to see for the longer-term objective. And I'm excited about this group. You know, we've been at it for 2 days of training, and I can tell you the energy has been great. We talked the first night about the past, the feeling that we had, but now it's about right now and getting through this week and getting in home and putting in a good effort on Tuesday.
So there are about 600 days here before there's a, I'm not going to use the word meaningful, but a competitive in-competition game for this team, just part and parcel of the way this break works. The World Cup takes up a huge part of this. Is there a feeling that it's time now to really look at that youth movement to say, hey, we've got to get as many young players in here as we can. We've got to figure out what the future looks like. And you kind of mentioned it there. There is a balance there on the competitive side. Do you expect this team to be young when it takes the field? Do you expect a guy like Tyler Adams, perhaps, to be able to get a start, who's taken such big steps forward? And Cameron Carter-Vickers or a Matt Miazga, even, who hasn't got a ton of opportunities. Is it time to really go youth movement with this program?
It's very important to start to give these guys these opportunities, no question about it. You know, as much as we'd like to have a great result against Portugal, the number 3 team in the world, on Tuesday, the game isn't about winning. It's not a qualifier. It's still an opportunity moment for a lot of these guys. And moving forward, once we finish on Tuesday, there's no games left in 2017. We close that out. And now when the new year comes in 2018 and we begin the process again, as you stated, we've got a lot of time now to really have moments where we can bring these younger players in and really give them those experiences, because that's the only way they're going to really understand what this is really all about. I mean, for people on the outside, you know, to even describe what CONCACAF and those competitions are like, you would never understand it until you're in it. And for these players, it's the same. They've got to get these experiences to really understand what it's about. And to your question, for sure, the younger guys now have those moments, because in a few years they're going to be at a perfect age where they'll be able to, we think, help this program.
There are a lot of guys, a lot of young guys, Dave, that people are talking about now to get themselves excited that maybe haven't gotten coverage, and we're curious a little bit about what the thinking and the conversations have been like on the inside of U.S. Soccer about these guys. One of the big ones is Jonathan Gonzalez, who's at Monterrey, didn't get called in for this game. What's the communication been like with him? How do you see his national team future?
Yeah, again, he fits in with a number of guys in that age bracket who are really getting great opportunities. And there was some discussion about Jonathan amongst us, along with several other young players. But we felt in certain cases, and he was one of them, that he's seen significant moments and minutes with Monterrey and playing, and we're keeping him on our radar for sure. We know about him. And like I said, this is the last sort of game in 2017 at a time where certain players like Jonathan and Christian Pulisic and a few others, that it benefits them to just sort of be where they are. And we'll have a lot of time once the calendar turns to bring some of these type players into the system. So they're all on the radar.
Another guy who's in Europe that people thought might have a look in this camp is Kyle Scott, who's gotten some appearances and looks. Has there been communication with him? Was there an idea of bringing him in?
You know, again, we had all these players' names on a spreadsheet. We went through a lot of these guys in terms of what makes sense, and there was some discussion on all these guys. And it's not because we don't think they're good enough. This was just an opportunity to keep the roster size somewhat smaller, allow the blend, as I mentioned, to sort of play itself out. And, you know, all these other players that didn't get in for this trip, there's going to be many, many more opportunities. So they're at a good age where they can continue to hone their craft, and we'll keep an eye on all of these guys.
Tyler Adams has been a guy on the forefront of kind of the radar here because of his season with the Red Bulls, because of this playoff series against Toronto FC. What have you seen from him in these first 2 days, Dave? What have you seen over the course of his career? He's a guy a lot of people are really excited about.
Yeah, no, we obviously paid close attention to Tyler and to a number of these younger guys that have been getting significant minutes. And in the first 2 days that we've had Tyler, he's been a very impressive young man. I mean, obviously, you know, he's fit, and he's very excited to be here. And it didn't take him long to jump right into the first session, and today was the second session, and make a good impression. So he's also one of these guys that has a good soccer brain that can play in several different positions. I know he played wide a lot of times with New York. We know he can play centrally, and I think that's a real bonus for a young player where you've got some versatility. So he's done really well in the first few days, and we'll expect him to get some minutes for sure on Tuesday.
Coach, how do you balance for young players trying to push them forward now that they have, as you said, this opportunity where maybe it's a less pressure situation, but not maybe push them too far? And on this show, we talked about Josh Sargent on the last episode of, is he a guy with no professional experience that should be given this chance, or is it maybe too much? How do you balance that for these players?
That's a good question, and it's a challenge. But again, for this particular week and the game coming up on Tuesday, and you asked me about Josh, this was for me a good opportunity because of the availability of some and the not being available for some others. I think it made sense to at least give him the experience of being around the national team, being in our camp, seeing how things are done on the field, off the field, and really getting an understanding of what the senior teams are about. And the pressure, he should not feel and won't feel pressure to have to perform at this time. I think for me, it was more of getting to know him, giving him a taste of it. And I think what needs to continue to happen, and I've been at this a long time, especially with the national team, is really having the pride to be a part of our national team and really understanding what that's about. And I think for Josh and others to be able to be in this environment with myself and others on the staff that have been doing this for a while, along with some of the veterans, it's really an important learning process.
Do you feel like that's something that was lost at any point over the last two cycles?
It's hard for me to say it that way. I don't know if I would say it was lost. I think it's a challenge. It's a challenge, obviously, when you're blending certain players from Europe, certain players from here, and building that. I think it was not lost, but I think it just needs to be reinforced even more with some of the younger guys, especially who haven't really been a part of it as much, and really understand that it's a privilege. It's not the right of just because you're playing well once you're here. And I think our group last cycle understood that. I don't want to infer that they didn't, but I just want to make sure it's reinforced, especially with these young guys, because nowadays with, you name it, social media, agents, parents, people on the inside, they sometimes get confused in terms of their priorities. And I think as long as they understand that it doesn't get any higher than this and you're representing your country, and keeping those priorities straight, I think, is important for the younger guys.
Priorities, I think, is an interesting word, Coach, because that's really what we're all looking at when it comes to our soccer culture, our development system, USSF, all these different things that we've had this shock to the system, and now there's all this self-evaluation going on. We're trying to figure out what those priorities should be. You have such a long and storied career, both in the domestic side as well as the national team side. When you look at our culture as a soccer nation, when we look at what we're doing, from the grassroots all the way up to where you're at right now at the national team, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? What are things that maybe you look at and say, we could definitely do this better. Here are some areas to focus on. What would you focus on?
Wow, guys, that's a heck of a question.
I know. That's...
Everybody's got opinions. Everybody's got thoughts. And I'm old school. I still believe in a couple of things. One is we need quality people at the lower levels developing good cultures and habits at club levels, academy levels. That's absolutely critical at the younger ages, for sure. I think as we move forward, I think we need, more technical people in places where decisions are made, whether that's having more technical people at the executive levels in MLS, having more people involved, even with our federation that can help in the process. I think that's really important, having good, honest discussions and identifying good young coaches that can help mentor and bring this thing along. But, I could tick off a thousand different things, but I'm still sort of an old school guy that we've got to get the right soccer people behind at every level to make sure that, these players are getting what they need so that they're ready when the moments come, when they get to the ages that matter. It's not an easy answer. It's not an easy answer.
Coach, we just need you to lay out a plan for the future of U.S. soccer in a ceramic shop in Portugal right now.
Well, you know, if you can sort of balance your life with the tragedies of not qualifying, with having the opportunity to take some young kids to Portugal, you know, it all kind of shakes itself out. It's all part of the process. But we're all pros. We just got to move forward and look ahead, learn from the past. The present right now is to have this group enjoy this week, get to know one another, and compete like crazy on Tuesday to try to get a great result. And then we can sort of sit back and really evaluate 2017 and beyond, really getting into 2018 and beyond. I have high hopes for soccer in this country. I'm not a doom and gloom guy. I've been through the ups and the downs at every level, and it's always going to come back and be better.
Give our fans some of that hope. What makes you hopeful as you look forward?
I do believe we have good young players. I still believe that we have a league in Major League Soccer that is getting stronger. I think there's avenues for all these players that now can make the jump to find their pathway, whether it's in MLS or whether it's in Europe, to get the opportunity to play consistently and to continue to grow. And as I said, you know, a lot of these so-called cycles come and go. You see it with every national team over the years. There's some that get strong, some lose out, then they come strong again. I believe that U.S. soccer still has a pool that's growing, and these younger players are getting opportunities. And given, as I mentioned, all the leagues available now, I just believe that it's going to pay dividends.
Dave, before I let you go, you have the interim tag right now leading these young guys, and we'll see him on Tuesday in Portugal. You can watch that game on FS1 here in the United States at 2:45 p.m. Eastern. What's the future look like for you? Do you want this job full-time, or are you looking at MLS? What do you see when you look at your own future?
Well, you know, I still have the energy. I still love coaching. I still love being a part of this at the national level, for sure. I've enjoyed my experiences immensely throughout my career with U.S. soccer, as well as MLS. So, you know, people have said I'm a perpetual 51-year-old, even though I'm not 51 anymore. I've got the energy to do it. As long as I have the passion and energy, I'm excited. So, you know, I can't speculate as to what's going to happen with U.S. soccer moving forward, nor can anybody speculate on anything moving forward with your life. But I'm excited about this opportunity. It's always an honor and a privilege to lead a national team. So if this continues, I'd be more than thrilled. If Major League Soccer were available and the right situation came up, I still feel that there's gas in the tank. So we'll just sort of play it out as we do for the rest of this year, and we'll see where everything sort of leads.
Dave Sarakin, interim coach of the U.S. They're going to take on Portugal on Tuesday. 2:45 p.m. Eastern, FS1. Dave, before I let you go, I just had to throw up a quick Google search. I'm looking at, and you mentioned perpetually 51. I'm looking at a spry young man, I think 1980, Buffalo Stallions, gold chains. I mean, this is a side of Dave Sarakin that I don't know that I've seen before.
Was I rocking a beard and a somewhat, I wouldn't say mullet, I did not go there.
No.
But I did have a pretty good head of hair back then.
I was going to say, it's quite voluminous, and you do have the beard. This is a good look, man. I like
Dave,
this.
I just want you to know that when you have the beard now, I tell everyone here you look exactly like the Dos Equis man. I think you could fill in on that role.
That's so funny. That's very funny. I've had other people say that.
See?
Hey, guys, maybe the beard comes back. You've inspired me.
Most interesting man in the world, certainly most interesting man in Portugal right now. Dave Sarakin. Dave, good luck. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Leaving home out on the road. I've been down before.
Back now, extra time. Time Radio, driven by Continental. You are listening on, well, I guess iTunes, wherever it is, RenWestSoccer.com. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast to get it every week, twice a week. Of course, a lot to talk about with the Audi 2017 MLS Cup playoffs coming back on the 21st. We've got a break. That doesn't mean we don't have news. Nashville have approved the stadium plan that they've put out there. So it looks like if you had to be a betting man, and, you know, I'm not in this case, but I would guess that Nashville is going to be one of those next four expansion teams. I just don't see any way with the ownership group that they have and this stadium proposal in place and the support of local government that they wouldn't get in there, especially given the success of Atlanta, Orlando, MLS in the South, professional soccer in the South. It's exciting. Hot Chicken FC. Let's do it. Or Hot Chicken SC or whatever you want to call it. I'm just excited to have Nashville on kind of the loop so I can go there and have an excuse to visit.
You pushing that Hot Chicken FC name right there.
Why not?
Hard.
Why not?
I don't know that anyone's picking up on that.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be the name.
I have very limited experience with Hot Chicken, and it sounds like
it's good.
Well, it sounds like the type of thing I'd love, but do they like pound it so it's really thin and not like a piece of fried chicken?
No, it's just like the seasoning.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a normal piece of fried chicken.
Right, right. Where did you get the pound?
Because I've had weird experiences where they're always like very like flimsy. Sandwiches, hot chicken sandwiches.
I don't think, yeah, I don't. Have you been to Nashville?
No.
Okay. So yeah.
Well, now they have.
So now we'll have an Extra Time Radio trip there maybe.
Whoa. Okay. Yeah. Andrew's promising things he's definitely not going to pay out
on. I was going to say I don't know how I'm going to do that with a child.
You know where there's some good hot chicken is in Columbus. So maybe you should be rooting for the Crew to get past Toronto FC. Well, get a little hot chicken for MLS Cup.
I will be there for the conference finals.
There you go.
Oh, conference there you go.
Boom. He's going.
He's already going.
Let him know.
Send me the place. All right. And I am there.
Okay, let's get into the Hot Take Hotline /mailbag. 401-206-0MLS. Extratime at MLSsoccer.com is the email address as well.
Good friend of the show, Bearded Jack. All right, this has been occupying my thoughts for a while with the international break. Seems like a good time as any to ask. What constitutes a dynasty in MLS? The most obvious example is DC United back in the day. 5 trophies, 4 years, 3 MLS Cups. Open Cup, Supporters Shield, 96-99. Who else qualifies as a dynasty? Does SKC winning 5 since 2012 count? LA winning 5 from 2010 to 2014? Does it matter which trophies they won? Does the trophy to year ratio matter? How long does it have to be?
SKC has 4, no? 3 Open Cups and a MLS Cup?
And a support?
No, they didn't win the Supporters Shield.
3 Open Cups and an MLS Cup.
I don't think they qualify as a dynasty.
Why not?
I think to have the dynasty status, you have to be like the best. Like people, when they say who's the best team in the league, they say you.
But we set that up until like the last month of the season, and this year they weren't even like
for 3 years in a row, dude.
What?
For 3 years in a row, we said they're the best team in the league up until the last month of the season, and then when the season ends, they're clearly not the best team in the league.
But I don't think they were the best team. They weren't
that conversation.
They're in the conversation, but to be a dynasty, it's got to be like who's the best team in the league? Bam, that's the team. You're not like, oh, well, they're a part of the contenders. They're among the teams that might be able to win.
And then they win Open Cups.
Yeah,
so they win trophies.
Look, I think Open Cup in combination with Supporters Shields or MLS Cups. And I think with the MLS Cup side, you have to have multiple and you have to be in competition for that Supporters Shield. It shouldn't be easy to be labeled a dynasty.
So you just said you have to win multiple MLS Cups.
I would say that is at least – you at least have to win one over the course of 3 years if that's your, like, period.
Right.
So I would say the LA Galaxy under Keno, Beckham for a sec, and LD, that was a dynasty to me.
Right. So the Galaxy from 2010 to 2014, clearly a dynasty. DC United from 96 to 99, clearly a dynasty.
Houston?
If they had stayed, I mean, it was the same core group in San Jose then to Houston from 2001 through 2006. That group was a dynasty, but neither franchise really gets credit for having had a dynasty. You could argue maybe San Jose because they won Cup in 1, Cup in 3, and then Shield in 5.
Right.
So that's on the fringes. I think Seattle from, 2011 to 2016, arguably a dynasty, though there was a lot of roster turnover that makes it a little bit
weird. There's no way in my opinion that team can be called a dynasty.
Because of success or because of the core?
Because they didn't win MLS Cup.
Well,
like
they did
win MLS Cup last year.
Okay, but at the end of this, and I don't think that sustained through that, I don't know. I don't.
How much of the core has to stay the same? For example, as Kalen Carr walks by, Houston Dynamo, like you have over the course of years, I guess he didn't win them. He went to them, but
I just don't.
Them.
I don't.
How
consider,
much of the core has to stay?
Sorry,
the same?
I don't. To clarify on Seattle, yeah. I don't consider that part of those early years. It was almost Nico Lodero came. We had a lot of the same pieces, and we went on a run. Like that was a team that you fired your head coach in that season. Like to me, I don't know. I don't give that team dynasty credit. I really am only giving it to like two teams, maybe three all time in MLS history. So that gives you an idea of where I'm at. But
if RSL had won that other Open Cup, would they have been one? If they had beaten DC United?
If they had, let's say they had won, let's say they beat KC in 13 and they'd won CCL, I don't think there's any doubt. Because ultimately you're measuring this on championships.
Getting to championships and losing, does that help? I'm curious about all of this.
I mean, it helps if you win multiple championships.
Right.
But I also think that team in the regular season was also a team that you look back like one of the best defensive teams of all time, if not the best. One of the best regular seasons of all time for like 4 or 5 years straight they were in that conversation.
Okay.
So,
well, there you go.
I don't know. They were also doing it.
I do just want to bring it back to the Sounders again. From like 2011 through 2016, they won what? 3 U.S. Open Cups, a Shield, and 1 MLS Cup. I mean, that's – Andrew, that's pretty good.
No, I agree. I don't want to discount their legacy because that team and what they did as an expansion team and then sustained success, that's an incredible thing. I'm just saying my definition of dynasty really requires a lot, I guess. So, wow. To me, congratulations on the MLS Cup. But
Cameron Porter Wiebe being raised in a world where being a dynasty is – he's never going to get that recognition from his father. He's always going to strive for it. And when they make the documentary about him being from the Barrio, he's going to be like, my dad never loved me the way I thought he would because I wasn't a dynasty.
He's not even born yet.
Tim Schwartz here. Let's do some trade fantasy hearing Lee Wynn to Dallas rumors. I take that in exchange for Zimmerman. Rowe can take Lee's spot at 10. Lee goes there. He's a bit over the hill is what he says, but he's a club legend. How do you guys feel about that?
I don't know if Lee Wynn's a club legend. He's a Dallas legend.
He was saying a Revs legend.
Okay. I was like, I'm not sure what that means.
One needs a center back. One could use a little bit boost in veteran creativity.
How do you put Lee Wynn and Mauro Diaz on the same field?
Yeah, that's the first thought. Maybe you don't because Mauro Diaz has been questionable as to whether he will be on the field.
I'm sorry, say again?
I mean, it's been questionable whether Mauro Diaz will be on the field in large part.
No, for sure, but I think he's coming back healthy, and I think they're going to try to rebuild around him. He's not one of the guys, from what I have heard, he's not one of the guys who was unhappy in Dallas. Walker Zimmerman was. If you're Dallas and you're trading Walker Zimmerman in the league, you have to do better than a 31-year-old who is kind of redundant in what you have on your roster. And I think Walker Zimmerman also wants to be overseas. He's a guy who, you know, there's been Bundesliga interest in him. And I think from what I've heard, he had interest back, and that maybe had something to do with him not having the best season. So I don't think that trade is realistic. I don't think it appreciably helps either team because Zimmerman won't stay in New England, and Wynn isn't what Dallas need.
Second trade, Gamer Tam from Colorado for Kubo Torres. Put him up top, Baji, Gashi, and Eigner behind him.
Boy, they need Gashi to come back from wherever it is he's been. I don't know where it is. Like he was non-existent this year, and he was supposed to be this huge signing for them. I don't hate that. I'm not like the biggest Kubo guy, but he holds the ball up pretty well, and if he has service, I think he can score. And I thought Eigner was a pretty good signing under the radar. That you know we're like, oh, you know, 1860 Munich, they're like collapsing. What's going on here? But he looked good when he played, and Baji is productive if not always the most cultured, but he is an effective MLS player, just not as the number one guy. So, I mean, I could see worse.
Houston would do that trade in a second. They would do it in a second. Kubo is not a DP caliber forward, but he makes DP caliber money, and I think he's under contract for 2 more years. So I think they would happily make that switch.
We would love to have any and all MLS potential trades that you want to throw our way. We'll try to come up with some as well.
Here's a Berrenti hot take with a MLS transfer. Joe in SC, which is either South Carolina, or if he plays diplomacy, then it's Supply Center. Berrenti, Red Bull New York sells Sasa Kljestan in the offseason in an in-league transfer. He's too old for Red Bull New York and their youth movement. Would not be surprised to see BWP gone as well. That is some sizzle.
That's pretty sizzling.
The core and base of your team. A guy in BWP who has become basically the embodiment of your team. That would be too large.
Maybe to your own detriment if we're talking about, you know.
Now we have another guy who said, with the improvements of Tyler Adams this year and Sean Davis, could we see the end of Felipe as a guaranteed starter for the New York Red Bulls?
Man.
Not as long as Jesse Marsh is there.
That's what I was going to say. What do you think about this Sasha Kljestan BWP stuff, Doyle? I mean,
BWP is 33 years old and he's under contract at a big number for two more years. I don't think there would be a ton of interest around the league. Now, I also don't think that the Red Bulls should be interested in trading him.
Agreed.
I know he came up small in the playoffs yet again, but like we've seen this everywhere in the world. Guys are, you know, come up small in these situations until the moment they don't. And we've also seen BWP come up big in the playoffs back in 2014. I think he had 4 goals in 4 games before the yellow card accumulation thing against the Revs. So you know he can do it. And they're not going to go out and get someone appreciably better. Again, the guy had 24 goals in 42 games across all competitions this year. He's still pretty good. I don't think they should trade him. I don't think they should trade Sasha Kljestan. I think it's nonsense saying that he's too old for the young core.
Agreed.
He's the first player in league history to lead the league in assists twice in a row. Valderrama never did that. Preki never did that. Marco Echeverri never did that. Landon Donovan never did that. Again, he came up small in that first game against the Red Bulls.
Against Toronto.
Toronto FC.
Against Toronto, but they outplayed Toronto. They ended up they lost to the best team in MLS history, as we're pretty sure they're going to end up being. They lost to them on aggregate. It's not like they got played off the field. So I if I was the Red Bulls, I would bring the entire core back and then just try to find two stud defenders to add alongside Aaron Long on that back line. Do what you can to make 2018 the year, because I do agree that the window probably closes after next season, but this team is close and they showed it against TFC.
Yeah, I don't understand the Sasha Kljestan stuff at all, because your entire team is built around this guy.
Yeah,
like he is the piece that everything revolves around. And like BWP, I think you might be able to survive with a different forward up there, but there is absolutely no replacement for Sasha Kljestan. You're going to waltz out there and get not from a performance standpoint, not from a club formation standpoint, not from a leadership standpoint. He dictates everything they do. If you look at chance creation this year, in addition to assists at the very top, passes in the final third at the very top.
And if anything, what people are complaining about is not having enough tools.
Right.
So not getting rid of the two.
When
you
give
have.
Him Danny Royer becomes all of a sudden MLS's best player in that month. They need to find another goal dangerous person still, I think, to add to those three. Otherwise, they're just utterly relying on those. That one's crazy.
Ed in St. Louis, is winning an MLS Cup worth more than $20 million? Atlanta may want to hold Almiron one more year and hope for strong hamstrings.
So Atlanta United, by the way, are saying, nope, we don't think we're going to sell this guy. Probably not going to happen. Tata Martino came out and said it, and as Doyle astutely noticed mentioned in his column, that's generally what people say right before they sell players. take that for what it's worth.
No, I mean, there's a couple things here. It might be more than 20. I've heard more than 20, significantly more than 20. And if you're in the neighborhood of tripling your investment on a player, I mean, that's good business. That is good business. You kind of have to at least look at it. Second of all, we saw in Dallas what happens this year when guys get kind of bummed at not being sold to dream clubs. That is a huge risk to take with a guy like Almiron. Almiron is great in MLS, and he's great in Atlanta, and like he's a good pro, so he'll probably be able to play another year happily here, but it's not his dream to play for Atlanta United. It's his dream to play for Arsenal or AC Milan or Borussia Dortmund or Valencia or Sevilla or, you know, one of the world's great clubs. And his MLS's role with these guys coming from Latin America and hopefully more and more from the U.S. to be able to improve, A, identify, B, develop, and then C, sell on to those great clubs. And I think it would be a huge boost for Atlanta United and for MLS as a whole to start putting guys into the first team of the Liverpools of the world, of the Schalkes of the world, of the Inter Milans of the world. And if that's if the money is right and the desire is there, I think, look, I think it's a step for the league to embrace that role because that's where we are in the global market.
And look, guys, this has been a strong episode, by the way. You're having a kid, and Doyle's had like four MLS revolutions to change the planet.
I know. It's been, I'm sitting here listening to it, and I'm like, feel like I'm in some like dark bar in, I don't know, some like Vienna in like the 1700s or something. We're just talking about theory. God. We're just getting after it. I mean, the other thing it does is, yeah, you lose Miguel Almiron from the league. But we'll all get to follow his career. He's not going anywhere. You still get to watch this guy and know that a formational part of his career, the part where he became a goal scorer and a dangerous player in the final third, came in MLS, came within Atlanta, and they had an amazing year. It also is just a shining light and a beacon to the Diego Rossis of the world, a 19-year-old who's currently at Peñarol, who LAFC are reportedly interested in, saying, come to MLS and develop, and not only will you get better, not only will you be in a great competition and have a great lifestyle and get paid and all this stuff, but you can get flipped on to that dream club down the line. And for MLS teams, it's we can get these guys and get the profits. And I wonder if Atlanta United is going to sit around and wait for a while and see what happens at the owners' meetings that always happen around MLS Cup and the other events that happen late in the year and see when or if this possible change could be made as it comes to what do we get to keep from sales. Because you don't want to jump the gun and make a sale like this of this volume without having the opportunity to reap the maximum reward from it. So yep. I think their ears will be to the ground. They'll try to figure out what the lay of the land is and make the move at the
right
time.
Following up on one little thing, and I fully agree with what you guys are saying, is Walker Zimmerman's dream and Walker Zimmerman playing for Oscar Praia is different than Miguel Almiron playing for Tata Martino.
I agree.
So there is a little difference in who these people are. Do you guys want two fan fictions for 2017 MLS
yes.
Cup?
God, yes.
Eric in Fort Worth, hot take, Remick wins goal of the playoffs, and Wilmer changes strategies, ambushes Seattle in the first leg, and Andrew Wenger starts and contributes a goal. No longer a secret because we already told it, and you know that everyone in Seattle's coaching staff listens
to this
show.
Wait, so how
show.
Are they going to reverse it? What are they? So they're going to –
What is reverse it?
Wait, didn't you say that he's going to reverse the script?
I didn't say anything.
Oh.
What are you making up right now? I just said Wilmer changes strategies.
Oh, well, that's
Seattle
what I got. So,
by starting Andrew Wenger.
Oh.
So you get that target winger off the wing.
Oh.
Slamming into the back of Kevin Lierdam.
Completely.
Towering a header into Stefan Fry's goal.
Just didn't associate those two things. It's like.
You didn't realize Andrew Wenger wasn't starting every game for Houston.
Yeah.
That's
because you didn't realize he. Yeah.
That's because you're
a lot of
coastal
there.
Bias.
Clearly, clearly.
Here's a prediction for MLS Cup. Sounders versus TFC. Josie tries to rustle Roman Torres. Gets frustrated when it doesn't work. Lashes out at the smallest, least physical player in Kevin Lierdam or Lodero. One of those. Dempsey comes in to protect. Elbows high. Both get red carded. Now we're in the second half. Marky Delgado hits two posts. Seattle wins when Roldan finds a streaking Jordan Morris on the break. Altidore and Dempsey never wear USM and T colors again. Roldan, Delgado, and Morris all feature prominently in the next cycle. Sean Lopez in Belmont, California.
I am liking this this like MLS fan fiction
yeah.
thing here.
It's good stuff. We're about to enter the offseason,
I mean
so now's the time for
there's a lot. There's a lot of drama to be had in that double red card move there.
Yeah, last one and we're gone. Avin Murray says, great podcast as ever, guys. Just wondering if Matt Doyle's still laying 2-1 on Columbus.
No, I mean, you know, I think Toronto's strong favorites. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I mean, I got blown up yesterday on Twitter because I was like, yeah, Toronto are still
because you troll people. That's why you get blown up.
Well, you know, whatever you want to call it, having well-reasoned arguments.
I want to see the birth certificate, time of birth, and then look at your TL and see how close to the time of your child's birth you're going to be tweeting about MLS.
Oh, we don't.
You're under
do
the
that.
Microscope
well, I mean,
now.
They do say that it's pretty boring in the lead up yeah, to like the active later. So
you're just going to be talking about Vancouver Whitecaps players diving in
yeah,
time waste thing.
Uh-huh. That I might. You know what? Got to provide a service, man. Got to provide a service to the fans. That's it for us. Hit us up 401-206-0MLS. ExtraTimeMLSsoccer.com. Look, I guess I'm handing the baton right now for at least a week or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep the soccer talk rolling.
I might just have a baby too, so I might be out. So Doyle can handle this by himself over the next few weeks.
That's probably not going to happen. Anyway, we'll see you later on next week, everybody. Stick around.